Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are midway through January and making our way towards the NBA All-Star Game in Salt Lake City. We are making our way towards the NBA trade deadline. We're making our way towards the NBA Paris Games happening on Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time between the Chicago Bulls and Detroit Pistons. Lots of stuff going on here as we head into the cold, bitter winter months in the Northeast region of the United States. What's up, guys? Spencer Davies, Brian Fritz, another episode of Keeping It 94, courtesy of the BasketballNews.com podcast network. Watched a lot of hoop yesterday. My favorite part, I think, was Brooke Lopez throwing away Gary Trent Jr.'s headband into the stands and subsequently getting ejected for it. And then the post-game interview where Joe Ingles ended up getting interrogated by the media and by Brooke. And they had a nice little back and forth asking about that. And it was funny because Brooke Lopez said that Gary's headband was talking to him, almost like in a serial killer movie. So that was pretty funny. Enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching the Sixers and Clippers go to battle. I know that the end score was not as close as we anticipated it to be, but the Clippers finally got Paul George back after missing five games. They were whole for the first time, and I don't know how long. By the way, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have only played 91 games together. Think of that for how long they've been together. That's pretty crazy. But just like we were talking about last week, Sixers are in a great place right now. They're playing a really good, solid, uphill pace of basketball right now. Despite, you know, James Harden, who's usually a slower pace guy, they're getting up and down the floor. Joel Embiid's running the floor. He's blocking shots. He's making his mid-rangers. He's dominating inside, getting to the foul line as per usual. Tyrese Maxey's back. Tobias Harris is really in a solid groove at the moment. Those are the things going on right now currently in the NBA. What say you, Brian Fritz? There's a lot of news coming out here as we begin this podcast, and some of it's around trades, some of it's around returning people from injury, so let's fill in the audience here.
Well, let me start off with this. Our theme for the entire season that we said was going to happen before the season started and has played out, especially in the Western Conference,
self-hi-fi,
is parity. Parity, parity, parity. However, now that we are just past the midway point of the season, we are starting to see the best teams break away from everybody else. The Celtics now have a four-game lead in the top spot in the East.
Jason Tatum going off for 51 on MLK Day. Whew.
The Nuggets, and now the top team in the West. The Grizzlies are only a half game behind them, but then it's the Pelicans are five games back. Those two teams combined right now have won 24 games in a row. Celtics have won seven in a row, Nuggets seven, Grizzlies 10. So we're starting to see some separation when it comes to the best of the best.
And there you have it. And that's what dominant teams should do. Now, I still think that that will end up, you know, regressing to the mean. I think there are a lot of teams that are going to be able to still chase them down. But at the moment, you're right. That's exactly what's happening. And it's fun to watch them kind of break out that way. I still don't think, again, that this is by any means settled, that these top teams are going to finish where they're at the standings currently. There's a lot of things that can happen. I think Milwaukee, for all that, you know, it's dealt with here the last like week and a half, and Giannis being hurt and not, you know, playing particularly well on the offensive end after his ridiculous stretch at the beginning of January. Now you're seeing Drew Holiday step up, man. I mean, you've seen Drew Holiday's offensive numbers the last two games, even the last three games, if you want to take it that far, has really stepped up in his absence. And I think, that's kind of showing their depth and their belief in everybody. I mean, 37 against the Raptors last night, and then against Indiana, he had 35. Just really, you know, taking his offensive game to another level. If you want to look back further than that too, at Miami and at Atlanta, 24 and 27 points there as well. So, you know, Drew Holiday stepping up in that absence. You look at Brooklyn, who's going to be missing Kevin Durant here for a while. They put up a good fight. I know this isn't a great example because they're at San Antonio. It's a team they should beat, but they didn't have Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant last night, and they still proved that they were going to come in and try and win that game and play with some poise. You know, TJ Warren came to Cam Thomas, stepping up there. Still not getting the offensive volume you want to see from Ben Simmons, but at least he took 10 shots in that game, and you know, registered a triple-double. You look in the West, you see Memphis. My goodness, I feel like almost similar to the Bucks of last year and maybe even this year, that the Grizzlies just don't get that kind of conversation in the West. And that could be myself included. But they are just they are a young team who's brash, and they'll let you know. They'll let you know. They'll talk as much as they want to and back it up. But what I like about them most, man, I mean, outside of Ja Morant, you got Desmond Bane there. You've got Steven Adams grabbing rebounds. Jaren Jackson Jr. having the Defensive Player of the Year season at the moment. I think he's in the lead for that award at the moment. The depth that they have. Tyus Jones, just terrific, terrific backup to Ja Morant. And he can prove that he can fill in for Ja when he's hurt as a starter, and has done a tremendous job of doing that. Memphis is a team that you got to look out for. I just saw the Pelicans, who have been banged up the entire season, Brian, entire season. Brandon Ingram hasn't played since the beginning of November. And Zion Williamson's missed a few weeks now with that hamstring injury. But CJ McCollum, my God, he has been just on a tear since those two have gone down, and is really, you know, pacing this team forward. I was really impressed by their defense. Dyson Daniels has been getting these starts in between. He had like four steals in the first half of the game that I was watching him against the Cavs in Cleveland. You have, you know, guys like Herb Jones, who's obviously, you know, missed a couple of games too, but Trey Murphy III. You've got, you know, all of this length that you have to deal with. Jose Alvarado is just a straight up pest, old school pest. They're deep. So while they are separating each other, and I'm talking about the Celtics and the Nuggets, I still think there's a lot of season to go. And, you know, those teams I just mentioned are a part of that. And there's still others that want to make noise as well. I mean, including, you know, my guys in Sacramento who continue to pedal on. And you look at, you know, even Cleveland is trying to be in that conversation if they figure out the road. So there's a lot. It's still a lot of parity. But yes, record-wise, at the moment, there is some separation being created.
You just mentioned a couple of teams, and we're coming up to the trade deadline, and everybody's kind of wondering who is going to make a move. Is there going to be a lot of action? There definitely are going to be some buyers. It just depends on what the cost is going to be. But I do wonder, when it comes to a team like the Grizzlies, when it comes to the Sacramento Kings, and when it comes to the Cleveland Cavaliers, which one of those teams could be most aggressive? Because it feels like for both of them, or for all three of them, they're one piece away from doing something special. Now, the Cavs, I think, could really elevate themselves to a true contender, depending on a move. I think the Grizzlies are probably already there, but could use one other move to help cinch things up. The Kings are the team that's probably the furthest away, but We know that they have an anxious ownership group that doesn't just want to get into the playoffs. If they start to feel something else, maybe they'll be even a little bit more aggressive. So those are three of the teams that I'm really wondering about and looking at, saying, what are they going to do at the deadline, if anything? How aggressive will they be? You know, you look at the Grizzlies. I mean, they believe in their system. They've done extremely well when it comes to their draft picks. So they're not known for making like a big splashy trade. You know, they're never going to do much in free agency. They just believe in their system and what they do. But if you can smell it, if you think you're that close to really having a chance to get to the finals and maybe even win the whole thing, do you go that extra step and make that move? And we've already seen the Cavs be aggressive going into the season and getting Donovan Mitchell. So they take it one step further now and say, okay, let's really make that move now if it presents itself.
Yeah. So the names that are being linked to the Cavs, I'm not necessarily thrilled about. Just as someone that covers them, I don't think that Tim Hardaway Jr. is the answer. I certainly don't think that Malik Beasley is the answer. I think either of those guys would be basically what you already have in Caris LeVert. I mean, sure, Caris's shooting isn't as crisp as Malik Beasley's can be, and we know that Tim Hardaway Jr. is a gunner himself. But I feel like Caris brings you a little bit more of that bailout type of game, that isolation game that if you need a bucket, he can go and get it. Sometimes he has trouble with turnovers. I'm aware that he is, in a slump right now as far as his sloppy closeouts are concerned. I get that. But at the same time, now you're able to kind of see how LeVert bounces with Ricky Rubio, right? You're able to see if LeVert can play off the ball a little bit more, see if you can get him into his spots and take some of the load off of Caris. Even though Caris is more comfortable with the ball in his hands, I'm understanding of that. I'm interested to see, how he plays next to Rubio now that Ricky's back. But those two targets I just mentioned, though, Tim Hardaway Jr. and Malik Beasley. Well, one, I think Beasley, while he is a very, very talented scorer, I don't think he addresses the need that the Cavs have. He is a very streaky three-point shooter and has been pretty much his whole career. And then you have Tim Hardaway Jr., who, while may be a better, fit per se for the Cavs, one, I don't know if he is a small forward that you need. He doesn't really have the length. His defense is, it's okay. But at the same time, you look at the contract that Tim Hardaway Jr. has too. And I think that could play a factor as well into what fits for the Cavs. So it's not easy to find these guys to defend and shoot threes. As we've mentioned before,
right,
the 3 and D wing players are not easy to find. And if you've been paying attention to the Cavs, look at the growth of Isaac Okoro. Yes, he doesn't have the size. He's only 6'5". He's smaller. He's decent sized guard, but definitely not for the three, but they've been starting him at the three. He's been shooting 48% since the turn of the new year from deep, on a low volume, mind you, but he's still playing the defense that we know he can play. And he's even been a little bit more apt to attack because teams are starting to show him a little bit of attention there in the corner now because of that success that he's had. And now you got to make decisions if you're defending the Cavs because you have the pick and roll game with Jared Allen. Evan Mobley's got the handoffs. The penetration that you get from Darius Garland and a healthy Donovan Mitchell when he's back. So, I mean, I'm not saying they don't need a move. I think they do need a move. I just don't know if the means to get that move are worth it, especially if Okoro's starting to find the groove that he has.
When it comes to Beasley, he's a volume three-point shooter, but he's not the biggest guy. I mean, he's 6'4". He's never been known for his defense. He's kind of a specialist. But even saying that, when it comes to his shooting this year, I mean, he's 38% for his career, 35.5% from three-point range this season. In his last 10 games, he's only hitting 28%. Of his threes. So, and you're talking about a guy that I believe puts up about an average of like 8 threes a game.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really the best fit when it comes to the Cavs.
And you think about, you can't take away those shots from Darius Garland. You can't take those shots away from Donovan Mitchell. Like, you want a guy that can hit a shot in a big moment, right? But you don't want that kind of volume. You want a guy taking 4 to 5 shots from the three-point land. Essentially, you want a PJ Tucker, right? You want a Dorian Finney-Smith. That's the type of player I think the Cavs kind of want and covet, but it's just not easy to find guys like that. And again,
to find somebody with size and consistency, that's what you want.
Exactly, exactly. Someone to nail those threes from the corner that teams are just completely leaving open. But the last 5 games, I'm going to tell you this right now, 5 starts for Isaac Okoro, and, you know, in 23 minutes a game, he's averaging 10 points, 3 boards, and shooting 56% from deep. I wouldn't mess that up, right? If he's finally getting into a groove, if he's finally taking multiple three-pointers per game, if he's able to attack from the corners and cut the way he does, whilst, by the way, and I saw this all the first half before CJ McCollum got it going, staying just like glued to these guys coming off of screens on defense and making amazing, off-ball plays and ball denial and whatnot. I've been an advocate for Isaac Okoro for a while, and it got tough to stick in his corner because, you know, at some point you got to help yourself. But I think since mid-December, he has definitely turned a corner, and I think the coaching staff starting to see that. And good for him, man. Good for him, because he's, you know, worked his ass off. And I don't know if you saw the videos that I put up on my Twitter, but Darius Garland and Jared Allen are the ones that are audibly trying to praise this guy and talk about the work ethic he has behind the scenes. And, you know, it's just a feel-good story when you see that. But I think it could be more than a feel-good story. I think this could be a fixture of their team as long as he's consistently getting these minutes and knows what his role is going to be.
And when it comes to the Grizzlies, I mean, they've got some things at their disposal they can do. They have all their draft picks. Like I said, they don't like giving up their draft picks because they're so damn good at drafting.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time of figuring out what the Grizzlies actually need to. That's the other thing.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they have Danny Green, which, you know, Danny's about to come back. And I mean, he's going to come back probably within 2 or 3 weeks, I think, from his torn ACL. He'll have to ramp up and everything. But everybody, you know, talks about him. He makes $10 million. He's somebody that maybe they say, you know what, if he's looking pretty good so far, maybe we want to keep a veteran presence in the locker room and a guy that's been there before and hit big shots and can hit threes and can probably still play some defense. But I mean, when it comes to what else they could use, I think
shooting?
I mean, everybody can use shooting. Everybody can use shooting.
Everybody can
use
shooting.
That's why, like, we, you know, on the website at basketballnews.com, we did this roundtable talking about, you know, trades we kind of like to see. And the one that I put down was Naz Reid to the Grizzlies. Because, like,
shooting.
Everybody needs shooting. Everybody needs shooting. But they also need a backup big fit in the rotation because Jalen Jackson Jr. keeps having so much trouble with fouls. Like, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's been a problem.
He's gotten better at it, but yes, absolutely, 100%.
So my thinking was, okay, Naz Reid is somebody that comes cheap right now. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. I don't know if the Timberwolves have the money to pay him. Plus, they've already paying a gargantuan amount of money to 2 bigs on their team, one of which has been injured for most of this season. And I don't think they want to, you know, invest even more money into their front court.
Yeah.
So why not move Reed while his value is the highest it's going to be? Trade him now. And then
especially if you're not going to play him.
Right. And the Grizzlies get a guy that's on their front court that can back up Triple J and can also knock down some shots. I mean, or he can play beside him, you know, as well, if they, you know, if Steven Adams is in the lineup. So, I mean, there's things they can do with him, and I think he fits a need. So, I mean, whether he doesn't go there, Naz Reid is somebody that, as well as he has played and helped the Timberwolves, I really wonder if they're going to be able to keep him and if they shop him around.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and I think he fits the mold, too, of what, you know, Memphis, almost the mold of what JJJ is. You know, he's not your typical big man, right? He's someone that can go out, stretch the 3-point line, He's a career three-point shooter, pretty much around 35%. You know, he's not your typical going to bang with the bigs type, but he can get you some blocks here and there. And he'll stretch the floor out, like you just said. So, you know, someone that's going to play 15, 20 minutes a game behind Jaren Jackson, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, would the Grizzlies be willing to give up a first-round pick, even if it's protected?
And it also depends on Steven Adams as well. But you could play Nas with Steve because Steve's going to be in the paint. He's going to be getting rebounds. Like, Nas is almost like a 3/4, even though he's 7 foot. Like, you know, like,
right.
It's a different type of
it. Yeah. Nas is a role player that's there for specific reason, and he's an insurance policy.
Sorry,
6'9", well.
Not 7.
You know, so, I mean, to me, it makes sense if that was somebody that they went after. Like I said, you know, they've got Danny Green's expiring deal. So if they want to do something, they can. I mean, for them, it's just whether or not they really want to make a move and if they're willing to include a pick, because they don't like including picks, but they've got their own picks and they've got more. So, I mean, they've got plenty of draft capital if they want to do something, how aggressive they want to be. It's just figuring out what that something is and not overpaying for it, because that's the fear from, I think, every team right now is that, you know, it's such a, you know, sellers are asking for everything under the moon right now. And I don't think they're going to come off of that until, I don't know, the trade deadline is the afternoon of February 9th, probably like, I don't know, noon on February 8th is when they might come down. So, I mean, I get the sense that's where we're going to start feeling about the real deals. It's going to be like in the final, you know, 24 to 48 hours before the deadline. So, but Memphis is a team I really look at. And then let's talk about the Kings real quick, because they're probably a little bit further ahead of the schedule than some people thought. I mean, you look at where they're at right now in that crowded West, they're in the fourth spot. They're only a game back a third. They only lead the Mavericks by a game and a half for the fifth. So, they're a team that you got Harrison Barnes and his expiring deal, you know. How aggressive do they want to be in going after something? But I mean,
they've just needed a backup big. That's
absolutely
theirs. And you know, you look at, I don't know, Mason Plumlee as someone, for example, like that would make a lot of sense in Sacramento.
Nerlens Noel would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly. Someone that is not going to take too much time away from Sabonis, because Sabonis is playing a crap ton of time and is probably the best. I wouldn't say probably the best. Say probably one of the top three centers in the NBA right now, right? You'd probably say top three.
Depends on how you're listing Giannis, but yeah.
Yeah, it does depend on how you're listing Giannis. And
I was Anthony say, Davis.
But I have Embiid, Jokic. Sorry. I had to,
yeah.
I had to pump the brakes there a little bit. But I'm looking at Sabonis as a whole, what he's done to bring winning to this team, in addition to De'Aaron Fox. That's not taking away from De'Aaron Fox, but leading the league in rebounding, the way that he's been able to play make for his teammates, the way he's been able to just bully his way inside, and he's nothing fancy. Lower the shoulder and put it up off the glass. That is literally Domas's game. And using the dribble handoff and using the backdoor bounce pass. You know, like, he is so adept at that stuff. Pushing the ball off of defensive rebounds, you know? Sabonis, if he ain't an all-star, I don't know how the hell that's going to work. But, you know, that they need someone to back him up at that position. That's pretty much where I'm at. And like you said, Nerlens Noel, Mason Plumlee, any of these guys. Like, dude, you could even call up Toronto and get Kem Birch. Like that's something. Somebody who's competent enough to play 10 to 15 minutes. It seems like that's a common overlying theme of this deadline. People want shooters and people want backup bigs. It's like,
it's amazing how much we were talking just a couple years ago. Like, centers are gone. They're phasing them out in this league, whatever. Then we look at it now. Let's look at who's been the MVP the last couple of years. Let's look at how centers are back.
Right. You know,
it's just a different skill set that some of them have. I mean, Jokic basically plays like a point guard. Sabonis plays like a point guard.
Hartenstein there in New York, you know, like, it's just, oh,
he's got to be available. They're not even playing him.
No, that's what I'm saying. And people know around the league how talented he is, because he's not a pick and roll type of big. He's more like a Plumlee or a Jokic, where he's helping in the playmaking department. We saw a lot of that in Cleveland here too. But
oh yeah,
no, it seems like the needs are very similar across the league. I did want to bring this up though, because this broke while we were about to record. Rui Hachimura, apparently, according to Shams Charania and Josh Robbins of The Athletic, is being explored for some trades there in Washington. So initial thoughts on that, because this is about quote-unquote clearing the logjam at power forward there with the Wizards.
I mean, I can understand it. I mean, their whole goal is to keep financial flexibility for the offseason. They, you know, the team has said they want to build around Bradley Beal, Kristaps Porzingis, and Kyle Kuzma. Kuzma's a free agent after the season. He's going to be getting paid. He's already said he's going to go into free agency. He hasn't said if he wants to stay in Washington yet, though. So, you know, and the team, you know, they want to be able to save as much money to make sure he gets paid. You know, Rui's on the final year of his deal as well. He's making just over $6 million. So it makes sense from that standpoint. I'm curious to see what they could get for him right now, but it still doesn't change the fact that Kuzma might leave. And I think they could still move him as well. I mean, they could still be sitting there going, we're not good. I know we want to build around Kuzma, but if he's not going to make a commitment for us, do we really want to go into the offseason with the gamble of losing him for nothing? And when there's plenty of suitors that will give up a first round pick for him right now.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think, one, I wanted to say my thoughts on Hachimura. I think that the team should absolutely be pouncing on that opportunity. I know it's been tough for him to stay healthy and stay on the court, but when he has, that mid-range jumper, that's butter, man. That's a buttery mid-range jumper. You go out there, get you some rebounds. We know how talented he is. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery, I guess. If that's what they're looking for.
Well, he's shooting 40% from three-point range. He's putting up 13 points a game.
Well, there you go. Didn't know he was even shooting the three that well, to be honest. So, I mean, but it makes sense from Washington's standpoint if they want to get Denny Avdia more time, you know, and they want to keep Kristaps Porzingis, even though I know you have your what-if scenario that we're going to be talking about next week.
Excuse me. I read that wrong. He's shooting just below 35% from three-point range.
Okay. I was going to say. Well, still
that
decent.
That makes a little bit more sense. He's shooting 49% from the field.
No, he's a mid-range assassin. That's just Rui's game. But
if he's
shooting
40% from three-point range, I mean, people are knocking down their door for him, man.
Oh, for sure. Especially because he's kind of in that tweener body, right? He's 6'8", 6'9". You know, pretty thick guy. So it's a talented player that a lot of teams on the market should be keeping their eye on. But who knows what Washington's expecting back? You know, Washington could be holding a king's ransom, and we don't know. Because every team's holding a king's ransom at this point. Like, for example, the Hawks are expecting a huge, huge return for a guy like John Collins. And JC's my guy. Love John Collins. But he should not be getting back a return like a Donovan Mitchell return. I read that and was just like,
who put that out there? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean,
that's probably,
it was so ridiculous. Like, oh, we want a Donovan Mitchell like return. I'm like, this is why I will go back.
And someone said similar about OG Anunoby too. When they were talking about
at least
those
two first round picks. I'm like, this is why everyone should hate the Minnesota Timberwolves for how they screwed up the trade market by making what is going to go down possibly as one of, if not the worst trades of the last 30 years.
Oh, you stopped short of saying NBA history. I mean, Charles Barkley went ahead and said NBA history.
It could be. I mean, this is right up there with giving up James Harden for almost nothing when the Thunder had him because they didn't want to pay him an extra $4 million, or the infamous Paul Pierce KG trade to the Nets.
Yes. I mean, that one set him back for a while. Or
I'll give you one that's maybe set back a team for a little while. Russell Westbrook to the Lakers.
Oh, God.
Well, there's another one. So, I mean, there's been some doozies that haven't even happened that long ago. But, I mean, that the Gobert one because they gave up the five first round picks. By the way, it doesn't help that Kessler is like putting up 2020s now.
Yes.
And he was like a throw-in in the trade. He was a throw-in in this trade.
You stole my thought. I was just going to say
he's playing better than Rudy.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy how
Danny
things
Ainge
work like
does
that.
It again.
Danny Ainge.
Don't make deals with Danny Ainge, everybody. Do not.
Do not. Do it's not. Incredible. Touch that.
He owns everybody so much. Hey, real quick, we talk about this Rui Hachimura story, okay?
Yeah.
There's no team that's linked to him in this article from Shams, other than several Western Conference teams in need and scoring are looking or interested.
Okay.
Let's play the guessing game.
Oh, geez.
Who are those Western Conference teams interested in Rui Hachimura?
I would say, okay. Sacramento Dallas? Makes sense. No, Sacramento makes sense to me. Dallas doesn't necessarily make sense to me because they already have Christian Wood. Christian Wood is somebody that kind of plays that position, even though he starts at the five. I don't know if him and Rui would make a good mix.
They need somebody from the backcourt that can shoot from deep, not from the front court.
Sure, sure. Who else makes sense for that?
Pelicans make sense?
No, because, I mean, if you have Ingram and Zion.
Right.
I mean, unless you're talking about a depth piece, then yeah, absolutely, that makes sense. Memphis?
The Nuggets make sense. Memphis?
The Warriors are great at developing talent. You know? Mm-hmm. You think about that. I don't know about Portland because they have Jeremy Grant.
Kings and the Warriors probably make the most sense.
How about Phoenix?
Well, Phoenix of course, is another...
We should bring it up while we're talking about Rui Hachimura. We should also bring up that Cameron Johnson is about to make his return very soon for Phoenix, as that also dropped before we started to record this podcast. That's big news for them because they've been mired in a very, very long slump. And, you know, Brian Windhorst said on his latest interview or podcast or whatever that Jay Crowder definitely is going to be moved. So, you know, that's another portion of that deal as well. That makes sense if they were to go after, say, a Hachimura or something like that too.
Well, the Suns, remember, they started 15-6. Mm-hmm. Since then, they've gone 6-18. They've lost 9 of their last 10. And I know that they've been missing Devin Booker. And
I feel bad for Mikal, man. Mikal is an Iron Man. He still has not missed a game. He has still not missed a game. I think he holds the active record right now for consecutive games played. He's going out there and fighting through some injuries, man. And he is, you know, you can't say enough about a guy that's going out there playing 40 minutes a night whilst he's dealing with injury. And he's still yet to miss a game this season. And, you know, I got to shout out my guy because that's not easy to do at all. And he has missed a total of 9 games in his career.
Yeah.
Think about that one.
Well, look at how beat up the Suns are. I mean, going into the season, we already wondered about the issues on the court, off the court, all that fun stuff, you know, that was going on. Devin Booker's missed 16 games. DeAndre Ayton's missed 6 games. Chris Paul has missed 19 games. Cam Johnson has missed 37 games. Cam Payne has missed 17 games. Shamet has missed 15 games. Dario Saric even has missed 19 games. So, I mean, they've been the most beat up team in the league by far. And they're in the tailspin to where some people are really wondering, like, is their window closed? Did they miss it? Especially because not only are the injuries this year and where they are, but just the way we've seen Chris Paul play.
What if they go and get Fred VanVleet?
That would help, maybe.
Would that help? I don't know. You know, we kind of brought it up a little bit earlier, but the Raptors are absolutely listening to people right now.
They are. And it sounds like, I mean, everybody has said, like, I know Jake Fisher from Yahoo even said, like, they're going to make a move. It's just, we'll see how aggressive they're going to be. Is it going to be just a Gary Trent Jr. or will it be something of a bigger move? Will it be a Fred VanVleet? Could it be, you know, OG? Could it be Pascal? Right now, it doesn't sound like they would go all in.
Yeah.
But they're open to everything there. Masai Ujiri is not afraid.
no.
to do what he feels is necessary. And he is not going to be somebody that's going to say, we're going to be in the middle of the pack. We're either going to be at the bottom and building back up, or we're going to be near the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what's he going to do and how aggressive are they going to be? Because it's funny, because as much as the Raptors have struggled, I could see them being aggressive and being a buyer for somebody in the hopes of,
because they're still in the mix.
Well, not just this year, but for next year. I mean,
no, almost a Pelicans type of way. Yeah. Right.
I mean, how long have they needed a big? Could they go out and go and try to get a Jakob Poeltl?
They've needed a big for like 2 years, 3 years.
Right. I mean, Jakob, he's going to be a free agent after the season, but maybe they believe they could re-sign him, you know? So, I mean, there's things like, and they say, we would just make the move now and get him, because they're not going to have any, you know, big time money in free agency, I don't believe. So, like I said, it's a win now, win in the future kind of move that they could really look at. And they've got a lot of different pieces, you know, that they could use. But I mean, the Raptors, I mean, they're a half game out of the play-in tournament, but they're 20 and 25. They're just kind of pushing along. It seems like when they
did just win a game at New York, they led it half yesterday against the Bucks. And, you know, to the point I was just making it with Van Vliet. As aggressive as we've seen him ever this season, back-to-back games, he scored 39 and had 9 boards and 7 assists across just one turnover against Milwaukee. And then in New York, he had 33 points and 8 assists against one turnover at Madison Square Garden. So maybe he's starting to get healthier.
He was not playing well for most of the season, and they have a big decision to make with him, because he is going to be a free agent after the season. He's going to opt out.
Yeah.
He wants more money than what they can give him right now. So, you know, that's going to be a big thing. I mean, remember Fred Van Vliet, he's beloved by the fan base there too.
Oh yeah.
It's just, they have to decide, like, do we need to make a move now because this is going to help with chemistry and we need something different in that spot, or do we want to continue this, you know, partnership with him?
Right. And I wouldn't even venture to move Pascal if I was them as well, because he's just having, again, an incredible year. So I wouldn't touch that. But I mean, if you got to move something, you got to move someone to get something back, right? So
right.
If you're thinking that, you can venture over to looking at Van Vliet. But
would you trade OG?
So I'm guessing that Toronto doesn't want anyone to lay a finger on that guy. Just because, I mean, again, it's not easy to find someone that defensively sound, right? Especially on the individual side of things. And, you know, he's proven to be a plus shooter. Honestly, his entire career. Like, he's shooting 37% his entire career from deep. Most of those are going to come from the corners, right? So, I don't know, man. Is he untouchable? Probably not. But it's something I think I would have a really tough time giving him up to. But again, this is why I'm not a GM. There are contracts to be sorted out with. He has an extension that comes up. After the 24 season, he's got a player option going into 24-25. I don't know.
He's on the hook for 17.3 this year and 18.6 next year.
That's tough.
And then he can opt out. But I mean,
that's a really good value though for the role he plays.
And he's going to, you just know that you're going to have to pay that guy even more money once his deal comes up. But I mean, he's a fit everywhere in the league. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, If they put him on the market, I mean, they're going to get 2 first-round picks.
Yeah.
They could get a little bit more. I don't even know, but there's...
I don't know. Me, there would be, thanks, Rudy.
There would be teams tripping over themselves, I think, to get their hands on OG.
As there should be.
I mean, hey, I talked about the Grizzlies. You can't tell me that they would... I mean,
he's a perfect fit for the Cavs. Picks,
He's a perfect fit for the Cavs. He's a perfect fit for the Grizzlies. I mean,
yeah.
Say what you will, but I mean, I think the Lakers would be falling on their face to maybe give up those two. Well, maybe they wouldn't be, because they desperately want to keep those picks, but they should be willing to give up both of those picks.
I wish you people listening right now could see Brian's face when he was doing that, because he was looking to the heavens as if he was like, please make this not happen. Please, please let them let their picks go. Like, he's just looking straight to the heavens as he's talking like this.
It's like that scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off when they show Cam, you know, in bed, and they go, instead of when Cameron was in Egypt's land, let my Cameron go. It's like when Genie was in NBA land, let those first picks go. it's just something like, I just totally botched it anyway when I did
that.
Did you
see Genie in the,
like,
car, just in the car?
Let those picks go. Let them go. Just...
You see Genie in the car, and then it starts. It takes off as it's rolling backwards through the window.
That's like, you're gonna hold on these picks, and what happens those years? It's like, all right, so we've got the ninth pick in a draft that has three good players. And the following year, we've got the 10th pick in a draft with five good players. Oh, I'm glad we held on these picks.
Let's talk solution here, though, because. Please. Another name that's popping up in the rumor mill, and I didn't intend for this to be a rumor mill podcast, but I mean, we're clearly doing well. We're bouncing off of one another right now.
Yeah.
Terry Rozier has been floated out there, and he's been floated out there for a couple months now. And with the report that Charlotte's going to start turning towards a rebuild, I forget who put that out there, but I did read that this morning.
Shams did that.
Yeah. I was going to say, now you're thinking, okay, what pieces and parts from Charlotte makes sense? For these teams. And I suggested Terry Rozier to Dallas. Okay. That was one of the things that I suggested in our round table. But Terry, if you need someone that can go out there and not give a crap and put up shots, that's your guy. That's your guy. And I mean that in the most respectful of ways. He is not afraid of nothing.
He's played in big games. Yeah. He's played in big games as well. He's got playoff experience.
Clutch player too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's been struggling from the field this year, but he's not going to be afraid to take that shot. Maybe a change of scenery will help him.
He's taking 20 shots a game, man. Like,
he was banged up earlier on in the year, but he's looking better now. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this is a guy, you know, like you said, he's put up 21 a game. What's he got? He's got a little over 5.5 assists. He's around there.
Yeah.
I mean,
but he's a scoring guard.
Yes, but you got to make a commitment to Terry. I mean, 21 and a half this year, 23, a little over 23 next year, 25 the following year.
With the cap spike, it's not that bad.
It's not that bad. I mean, in 2025, it's only partially guaranteed. I don't know what the partial guarantee on that is, but it's only partial. But I mean, this is one of the things where you... I'll go back to talk about the Lakers before the season, because everybody's like, oh, they got to preserve that cap space. I'm like, that's one of the guys. It sounds like maybe they would be willing to give up the cap space for if Charlotte was willing to trade him. So, I mean, I think all eyes have kind of been off him when it comes to, you know, the Lakers. I wouldn't totally be shocked. I mean, I know that they need better shooting. They need wings. They could use a backup big. I don't think they're opposed to getting another point guard if it means they would move off of Russell Westbrook. And that would have to be the deal. It would have to be a Russ thing, I think, for Rozier. I don't think they want to stack contracts to go out there and get Terry Rozier. Maybe I'm wrong there.
You talked about PJ there. Washington too. Like you know, that's, like you just think about all the types of talent you can poach from this team now that we know where their trajectory is.
Right. Even like if you put Plumlee in that as well. Mm-hmm. I mean,
shoot, I would go after Richards.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, how about people going after Jalen McDaniels?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. See now all of the possibilities are stacking up. As soon as a team hears that, okay, they're going this way, we have found our first seller. They're going to pack like a pack of wild dogs. They're going to just pounce.
You say that, though. This is one report, and I'll believe it when I see it from Charlotte, because who's their owner and making the decisions? It's Michael Jordan. He doesn't want to tank. He doesn't like to tank. Here's the thing, though. It doesn't matter if he wants to, if he likes to, anything. They're tanking because they've only won, 11 games this season?
How does Mitch Kupchak handle rebuilds?
Well, hopefully you don't want.
I shouldn't have asked you that.
Luol Deng on a 4-year, $72 million contract.
Oh, no, here we go. Timofey Mozgov, $64 million. No.
Look at Brian Windhorst's face at 12:01 that night when he said the first deal has been done, and that was the signing for the Lakers.
Oh.
And he looked at it and was like, what? What? Do the Lakers not understand free agency? What's going on here?
So Hornets country should be wetting themselves right now?
I don't know if they're really going to go all in. I mean, we keep saying they're going to make a move. Yeah, they should make a move. It's just what is that move going to be? And by the way, Gordon Hayward, I don't think they're going to get off that. That's something LA has said no. I think every other team in the league is probably saying no as well. I mean, he's got one more year left at $31 million, and he's missed so many games to begin the season. He's banged up again. He's always got these knick-knack injuries that are keeping him out of the lineup. He can't stay healthy. So that's going to be a rough one for anybody to take on. But they've got other pieces that if they are willing to take on a salary in the short term and take picks, they could make moves. It's just then they're admitting they're doing a rebuild, and Michael Jordan has never wanted to admit that.
You know what, though? It'd be a breath of fresh air. I know that LaMelo probably wouldn't want to do this. He's still really young, but I mean, obviously he's, getting to that all-star, tier of player. So
I would disagree. I think LaMelo would want to do this.
At the same time,
he's seen what's going on, and we need to do something different.
I would be thrilled if I saw JT Thor getting playing time, right? I would be thrilled to see Kai Jones finally getting playing time. Mark Williams, who's been playing some solid ball for them at center, right? Like Bryce McGowan's, give him some minutes, see what he's made of. That's when teams start to really discover their talent, right? Is when they give the young guys a chance. And I'm interested because, I mean, Steve Clifford, he's usually that guy that coaches a team better than you think that they're going to be, right? And didn't happen this year with Charlotte. But
no.
Probably solid at developing them, right?
Jalen McDaniels is a young guy they should want to keep. The problem is he is an unrestricted free agent after the season. They're going to lose him.
Yeah.
They're going to lose him. And he's playing well. And his trajectory is going up, way up. So, I mean, he's somebody that's probably going to get moved. We'll see what kind of value he has around the league. Can he fetch multiple second-round picks? Will somebody give up a first, a protected first? Or is he just part of a bigger deal that includes other players from the Hornets? P.J. Washington's the other one. He's going to be a restricted free agent, but he's going to get paid. He struggled shooting the ball this year, but he's in for a good size raise, and do the Hornets want to commit to that or what?
It's a good question. It's a good question. I think we ran through about all the rumors, right?
Yeah, probably.
You said, yeah, probably. Major injuries that happened since the last time that we potted. Jaylen Brown went down. I guess not a major injury, but yeah, he hurt his groin. Donovan Mitchell also out with a groin. So that sucks. We had a couple returns on the horizon. Cam Johnson coming back, so that's good. Tyrese Halliburton, that's the one I wanted to hit too. Sucks, man, because he had been playing such a good brand of basketball. He was definitely on his way to being an all-star, especially with the way the Pacers are positioned in the standings. But he bruised his knee and sprained his elbow, and he'll be reevaluated pretty much there at the end of the month. So we'll see, where that goes.
They've been missing Miles Turner with back injury as well. So, I mean, that's why they're backed only a game over 500 right now. They were looking, they might still be really aggressive before the trade deadline, but they've dropped four in a row, and, they're back into the eighth spot now, and, not having Halliburton for, probably at least another couple of weeks is really hurting them.
Yeah, no question. No question. So those are pretty much big injuries. I wanted to hit on two bottom of the totem pole Western Conference teams, and one not part of the bottom of the total poll, but having fun watching the Thunder right now. They are two games under 500. Look out. They are playing with a poise and a belief in one another. Josh Giddey has turned it up. So we were talking about Shea carrying the team for pretty much the majority of the first third of the season. Josh Giddey, his stock is going up. Really, really being aggressive now and taking shots. He's always involving his teammates. And as of late, he's been able to keep the turnovers down. Really, I love watching this young Aussie play, man. He is just a rocket full of energy, and he plays the game the right way. He's, you know, really looking like him and Shea are going to be the ones who, you know, take this thing forward. And, you know, giving them the keys, I think, is huge. But then, you know, you have your surrounding talent. You know, Lou Dort's having a solid season. Jalen Williams, we barely talk about. You know, Jalen Williams leads the league in dunks.
Been coming on, man.
I feel sick that I don't talk about this kid because I don't watch enough of him. But the things that I read around the league, like he has made such a solid impact in such a short amount of time. Dude, he's playing 28 minutes a game. And usually, like, that's, you know, top five pick type of minutes, right? But this dude was taken in the lottery, late lottery, 12th overall pick. And, you know, he's having a good season. He had a not that great of an offensive performance against the Nets, but they won by 10 in that game. But I need to watch more Jalen Williams. Admittedly, I need to watch more Jalen Williams. They also start another Jalen Williams. Didn't know if anyone knew that. And then Isaiah Joe shooting the lights out. And it's just, they have such a good energy about him. They don't even have a Chet. Poku's been out for a significant amount of time. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl's been out for a significant amount of time. And they are winning a legit amount of games. And what's most impressive is they were just on this really long road trip where they were taking care of business. And I saw this team in December when they came to Cleveland. And they weren't nearly at that level. I'll tell you that right now. They were not at that level. But since the turn of the new year, man, they've won five out of their last six. They just went 3-1 on a very impressive road trip, man. They beat the Sixers, the Bulls, and the Nets, and barely lost to the Heat at the end of that game where Jimmy Butler got the and-1, and they probably should have won that game. So I'm just loving what I'm seeing from OKC, man. I am really loving what I'm seeing from them. And it's been a testament to them keeping the team together. And they're playing a good brand of basketball right now. That's all you can say. And I love the way that young teams come out like this. And they're not going to be at the bottom. I really don't believe they're going to be at the bottom. There's a lot of people that think post-All-Star break, they're going to start shutting these guys down. I don't think that's the case anymore. Because whatever their freaking pick do they need? What other more youth do they need?
Well, they already get to a point too. Like, I mean, how many times have you heard that Shea does not want to go through this again when it comes to like a, you know, tanking? I mean, it gets to a point where even though you know you're not a contender yet, you want those guys to get reps when it comes to the postseason. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in the 10th spot right now, but the West is so tight. They're only a game back of the sixth seed.
There you go.
I mean, that's it. So, I mean, we sit here and, you know, they've got, you know, what, 1,000 picks over the next 5 years, whatever it is.
And they have a number two overall pick waiting in the wings next year, too. Right, like, you don't need any more. You're good.
They can't even use all of these picks that they have. So, you
know, they can use them in deals. That's where it's going
to
get fun.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's one way to use them, though. But, I mean, they've got, you know, Chet's obviously out for the season. You know, they've got that kind of in the bank. You know, and see how good he's going to play once, you know, he returns next season. But as well as they're playing right now and the way the West is, this is a team that I do wonder if they say, maybe our move shouldn't be in the offseason. Maybe it should be now because we can't use all of these picks on it for ourselves. We can't draft all of these guys. Sooner or later, we're going to have to move off some of these picks. Maybe now would be the time to set ourselves up for the future. We can get into the postseason this year, get some experience, and set ourselves up for in the future, especially if a team is willing to sell right now, because they have as many assets, if not more than anybody else in the league.
Yes, they do.
So why not be aggressive now? Why not zag when everybody else is zigging?
No,
you know, just do it right now. I mean, your team's on the upswing. You've got, you know, Shea is a proven leader, a clutch guy, probably the most improved player this year, I would think. If not, he's definitely in discussion. And you mentioned
it's him or Markkanen right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Josh Giddey is, God, if you can't have fun playing with Josh Giddey, man, you just don't like basketball. They've got so many good things, you know, going in the right direction for them. Now is a time where if there's something good that can present itself, I think you want to go out there and do it.
Agreed. Agreed.
And who worries about tanking? I mean,
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You're like not going to have a chance. Yeah. I mean, there's five teams below you in the West.
You've come too far now.
There's six. Yeah. I mean, so what do they have? Like, what is that? They have the 19th record out of 30 in the league. You're too damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to bench everybody. Shea would have to have like a strained calf for the next 2 months.
Well, that's why I'm knocking on wood for them, because they haven't been able to stay healthy throughout the course of an entire season, right? But we're halfway through. We're approaching almost that time to where we get to the All-Star break, and that's usually when they start turning down, right? But I honestly think that they're going to stay healthy and they're going to be good. I'm just saying.
I would hope so. I mean, because they're right in that range.
And if you use those picks, go out and get a big. That'd be my advice. Just go out and get a veteran big. But
that's a team that right now, man. I mean,
and a shooter. But other than Isaiah Joe,
could you get a Jakob Poeltl there?
No.
Is there another could you get a Miles Turner there? I mean, it just depends if either of them wants to resign. Yeah. Obviously, that's a big if.
Vooch
would be another one. I was thinking of that one. That's actually a sneaky good one. I mean, we don't know what the Bulls are going to do.
Rim protector, but.
Right. But I mean, he fits in what they do, you know, offensive center that can pass the ball and can hit from the outside as well. Yep. He would be a very interesting piece.
Yes. See, look at that. Look what brainstorming does. I want to touch on two more things. So one, John Wall went on Theo Pinson's podcast, I believe it was, and spilled a lot of tea. Let's just keep it at that. Spilled a lot of tea, talked about his time with Houston. Thought it was particularly interesting that he blatantly said that he told Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. that you wouldn't be getting away with this on any other team. And getting away with what they're doing in his eyes is pretty much getting their stats and not playing team ball is what I would assume he's talking about, right?
Right.
So I agree with him in one right, because when I watch the Rockets play, it's just awful. It's terrible. Other. I'm going to preface this. Then Alperen Şengün, who, by the way, before that ridiculous performance in Los Angeles, I had actually been watching a lot of Rockets games because, just flat out saying it, stuff became legal here, so I've been a little tuned in extra to some of these games. Your Lakers also broke my heart in one of those, and we'll get to that when we close the podcast. But no, I've been watching a little.
By the way, just so anybody knows, this is not of a recreational drug type of things that become legal here. This is something else.
So I actually have been watching Şengün, and I love watching Şengün play, man. He's like Nikola Batum said it the best, man. Like, and I hate player comps, but when you watch him play, he is baby Jokic. He is in the middle of the floor. He's handing off. He's finding
cuts. Kirkland Jokic. Jokic.
Did you see him running the floor the other day? A little behind the back pass. You know, like he has fun playing the game. I wish that, you know, the coaching staff would let him shoot a little more from deep, because he's got the opportunity to. Teams aren't really paying attention to him out there. But he's able to get inside, use his hook shots. He can block shots. Smart, heady player. If they don't have a true point guard, I say just F it. Go through that guy. Let him run the offense. Do what Denver does. That's what I'm seeing there. And, you know, at least they have a team player in Jae'Sean Tate, who just came back. And, you know, he's doing good since he's come back. But they have all these minutes to allocate to KJ Martin. They're trying to showcase Josh Christopher. You've got, you know, so many different young players out there. Usman Garuba getting the backup 5 minutes the other night. You know, like, you've got so much going on. but I don't see too much team ball when Alperen's not out there.
You mean,
I'm noticing.
When Eric Gordon was asked the other night, like, what do you see when it comes to progression with this team? He goes, I don't see any progression.
Well, that's just flat out telling the facts. And although I don't like the way John Wall went about it, I think he could have kept that in private or not mentioned names, or when he was asked about names, not said anything.
Right.
I mean, sometimes, you know, he was telling straight up, you know, like, you can't get away with that type of stuff. You have to immerse yourself into sacrificing for the better of the team, not taking as many shots per game. Now, I will say, Kevin Porter Jr. this season has not done what John Wall's been talking about. Kevin Porter Jr. has been thrust in a point guard role to where he is actually doing some damn good stuff. He has some turnover issues, but he's been moving the ball and stuff like that. Jalen Green, when I see Jalen Green, for the most part, he has gotten better at dropping the pocket off a little bit, but he's driving into like three guys and trying to get these shots off. That's just not good for his development, right? And he's able to shoot the lights out. We saw that in the Laker game. He pretty much single-handedly brought them back with that scoring binge at the end of the third quarter, right? But the types of shots that you take is so, so paramount to how your development goes. And I just don't like the shots that he takes.
I think what's going to be curious is we sit there and we talk about the selfish play of some of their younger guys. And then all of these rumors that are out there that I think are very credible from the sources that they're coming from, in that James Harden could return to the Rockets next year. And I'm like, how is that going to work?
That just has mess written all over it. But like, why would James even be talking about that right now? He's in the middle of a championship chase. They're playing a really good brand of basketball right now in Philly. Joel Embiid's healthy. Harden, I think, is playing the most refreshing basketball that he's played in like 3 years. Like,
I think that James is trying to downplay it, but obviously he told somebody or leaked it somewhere and it got out there. And Tim Bontemps and Tim McMahon from ESPN got their hands on it.
Yeah.
Especially McMahon. And he's
Woj broke it on Christmas or whatever. Yeah.
Right. And they were like, hey, he's open to coming back here. I mean, because he likes Houston a lot. And of all things, he wants to play with Eric Gordon.
Hasn't Eric Gordon wanted out for like 3 years too, though?
Yes.
Then how does that work? Like, what if Eric
gets, I don't know.
But here, maybe that's why the Rockets are holding on to him for dear life, because they want a first-round pick for him. Maybe that's the reason, right? Maybe that's
one of the theories. Hey, you know what, though? They could trade him and they could re-sign him in the offseason because they're going to have
Eric's still playing good, by the way. He's being a good soldier.
He's trying to be. He's frustrated, but he's trying to do the right thing.
Right. I mean, probably don't go out and say there hasn't been any progression. Yeah, but again,
he got asked the question and he was given an honest answer.
Tough love, though, right? Because John Wall did the same thing. I don't really agree with the methods of which John Wall said what he said. And I feel bad for Justin Patton, who was just living his life. And John Wall said that we were starting dudes like Justin Patton. Like, just calling him out, catching strays for no reason. I feel
bad.
That was
a drive-by, man.
We've talked with Justin Patton on our Basketball News Spaces before. He's a good guy. I feel bad. But, not fan of the methods that he did it. But just because John spoke of that, and I've been watching Rockets basketball the last, like, week and a half, from my observations, I'm not saying this has been the whole season, they just need to move the ball more and take better shots. I think that's obvious. And when Şengün's out there and guys are cutting and they're getting in transition because they're the most athletic team. And by the way, they're one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the NBA. You can take advantage of that stuff. So wanted to bring that up. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about is because I had a really solid week of covering basketball, being in basketball environments. Like, I went out to Akron to watch my Zips take on Eastern Michigan. Ended up meeting, you know, Coach Gross, some of the guys in the locker room that know some people I know. Obviously, Imani Bates there over with Eastern Michigan. Didn't have the greatest game against the Zips, but bounced back really nicely against Kent on Tuesday. Still keep him on your radar, folks. He is a hell of a talent. and still growing into his body too. But, you know, did that. And then, you know, you look at Monday at MLK Day. Now get this, Brian. I thought this was the craziest bit of coincidence. So I didn't even have a story for MLK Day. It was 3 o'clock PM game. It was weird. You know, the Cavs had just been getting back from a 5-game road trip, 3 different time zones. Really tough scheduling by the NBA on that one, by the way. and not to mention the Pelicans had just come off like a 10-day trip themselves, or was finishing one. But the Pelicans locker room, so chummy, man. And it was cool because I realized how many people I have interacted with. But this was pandemic era. So just a little backstory. You should know that I know Larry Nance Jr. I saw Larry Nance Jr. all the time because he played for the Cavs. He was all around here. And obviously his dad's a legend around these parts. So I saw him, dapped him up, said, what's up? But seeing CJ McCollum, the last time I saw CJ McCollum in person was like 3 or 4 years ago. And I go up to him and I'm like, hey, a lot's changed for you in 4 years, huh? He's like, you're the president of the Players Association. You're married. You have a kid. And here I am. I'm doing the same stupid stuff. But it was cool. You know, talk to CJ a little bit. We talked our usual Cleveland sports banter. And then, you know, just being in the corner too, meeting Dyson Daniels, who I was able to do a one-on-one interview with when he was going to the Ignite over Zoom, met him in person. I mean, it's just these kinds of things. I love having, you know, this opportunity to do this stuff. Jackson Hayes was in there as a friend of a friend of mine. We figured that out because, you know, we know that he goes to the same high school as my friend went to. So that was awesome. And then, you know, as I'm chumming it up with all these guys, you know, Trey Murphy the third hears this. I go up to Trey and introduce myself. He's like, oh yeah, no, I remember, because I did a draft profile on Trey a little while back. So just the coincidence of knowing this entire locker room that I've interacted with before, both pre-pandemic and during pandemic, I thought was pretty special. And then to top it off, you know, one of my really good friends from the combine, who's an assistant coach for the Pelicans, Ryan Pannone. Seeing him there after all the hard, you know, work and grind that he's been through, just seeing him there in that environment, and us both being at that position, just was really special to me. So, you know, I tweeted it out. I was just like, it's just crazy how small the world of basketball is, because the way I like to put it is if you know somebody, then they know somebody. But if you don't know somebody, they're going to know somebody that knows you. Like I don't know if that makes sense at all, but it's crazy just how small the basketball world is when you're in it for a little while. And it kind of makes you really appreciative, and it kind of gives you a little bit of a smile on your face, knowing that, you know, you had played a part in this person's career or this person's come up or whatever, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because, like, years ago when I used to be around the Orlando Magic a lot, I mean, one of the guys that was very trusting of me, maybe it's because I was so young at the time, you know, being in my, my early to mid 20s, like Penny Hardaway was great with me. I pestered him a lot. I probably pissed him off plenty of times, but Penny was always great with me. I remember, how about this one? The year where Shaq left Orlando via free agency, at that same time, the Dream Team was practicing at Disney World.
So that's why you're a Lakers fan.
And I was a Lakers fan before that. But everybody was trying to talk to Penny. And, you know, different people tried to go up to Penny at different times and then get a couple words with them. And maybe just kind of was like, hey, look at this kid, needs something or whatever. Nobody else could get anything for Penny. And he literally was like, come with me. And we kind of went in our own little space for 5 minutes, and he let me, you know, talk to him about it, because it was before Shaq had left, but everybody kind of figured he was gone. And I believe that's the timeline of that. And maybe it was right after Shaq had already said he was going to LA. But I mean, he did that for me, and you know, some other guys really went out of their way. I remember Pat Garrity was great, you know, that he would remember me, and I, you know, be around Pat a little bit, and really smart guy, you know.
Wet jumper from deep. Remember, Pat.
Oh, my God.
Stretch four.
Yeah. Even guys like Jeff Turner, who's now on part of their television broadcast team. You know, Jeff was really good to me when I was younger. It's funny. There's like little things that you remember that maybe doesn't mean something to the other person at the time. But you remember them for a long time. They go a long way and what they did for you and what that meant for you.
Yeah, it is. It's a good feeling, man. And like, again, especially for someone of, you know, CJ's caliber, who's president of the Basketball Association and,
yeah,
you know, seeing Dyson Daniels. I mean, I know it's still, he's a rookie for goodness sake, but he's starting in NBA games and Trey Murphy's making big plays in the playoffs. He remembers this stuff. Like, That kind of stuff just tickles my fancy, man. It's just great.
Because
again, that's why I do what I do. You know, like,
right, because you're a basketball fan and you like having, you know, seen these guys have success and play well and do good things.
Yep. 100%, man. 100%.
That's the bottom line. It's not just about like it's not like you trying to like name drop or anything like that. It's like you like seeing people have success and do mm-hmm. really good things. And that's an admirable quality, because there's a lot of people that all they want to do is name drop, or all they want to do is, you know, get their own name out there for whatever reason. So.
And that's honestly, that is what I hate the most about the industry, is that we should never become bigger than the story we're covering. That I will leave it at that. I think that's a good way to close the pod. I think that is a perfect bookend for us here. So I'm not going to go any further in that before I get myself in trouble. But Mr. Brian Fritz, I appreciate you joining here on the Keeping It 94 podcast. Don't forget, guys, subscribe, rate, review. We are on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to podcasts. So please, again, subscribe, rate, review, leave a comment, interact with us on Twitter. I am at Spin Davies. He is at Brian Fritz. I'm on Instagram at Spin Davies. He's on Instagram at It's Brian Fritz. Going to do a quick plug too here real quick, other than listening to the Dunker Spot and the Alex Kennedy podcast. You have my articles here this week. I had a opportunity to chat with Joakim Noah over in Paris as they get ready for the Paris games there on Thursday, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be the Bulls and the Pistons. Really special moment coming up there for Killian Hayes to play in front of his friends and family. I'm ecstatic for him. Me and Joakim talked about that. We talked about retirement. We talked about his involvement in the Basketball Africa League, told me he found his purpose in life. So that was really nice to hear about that and the growth of basketball in general. So please check that out. That's a Q&A on there. And yes, I did tell him I was from Cleveland at the end of the interview and he chuckled. So that was pretty awesome, knowing after these years that Joakim Noah still has a great soft spot for Cleveland, his favorite vacation spot. So make sure you check that out on basketballnews.com. I'll also have a feature on Xavier Tillman coming up this week, hopefully sooner rather than later. Talked about him and his approach to the season in year three and the way that he's done his different routines while staying ready for this Grizzlies team, who again is just firing off on all cylinders. Can't wait for them to face the Cavs on Wednesday night as we record this on a Wednesday afternoon. So until our next episode, we'll be probably talking more as the trade rumor mill heats up, and we'll see if these teams keep separating themselves. So till that point, everybody have a good one and see you later.